Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 227 of CJ Evolution. Patrick here. I'm the host and creator of this great and growing show called CJ Evolution. This is a podcast for the criminal justice professional like you, hosted by me, another CJ professional. Thank you. Thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. So excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. You hear me talking about this company so much because I love them so much. They make some great coffee and other elixirs and cocos. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to get 15% off of all your purchases using the promo code CJEV. Here at CJ Evolution, not only do we celebrate and honor all of our first responders out there, brave men and women who work in the criminal justice field, we love our military veterans, brave men and women who protect this great country every day. My next guest, he's an ex-military guy serving in one of the toughest military units in the world. And when he was growing up, he was very wealthy and rich, and they had it all. And then something horrible happened. His father passed away. His family moved to New York City, and he was growing up in some of the toughest streets in America. But he pulled himself out of this with a little faith in God and the right people in his life. You're going to love this guest. He is such an inspiration. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Super pumped to have my next guest on. If you don't know who he is, you should find out who he is. Going to tell you who he is. His name is Remy Adeleke. He is a motion picture star. He's also an ex-Navy SEAL, and he's also one of the biggest guys out there right now talking about leadership and self-transformation. Remy, you there, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love you. Thanks, Remy. I know you're very, very busy. I know you're traveling constantly. I didn't give you much of a bio there, sir. You want to fill in some gaps? I know there's so much more to talk about your background that I just give you. I just gave you credit for. Can you talk a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So you want the bio or just the background?
How about your bio? Where you come from? Because I know you got a rich history. You're a son of a well known Nigerian engineer and a homemaker. I want you to go into that, man, because it really is amazing.
Yeah. So my dad, he was a Nigerian engineer, and not just an engineer, but he was an entrepreneur himself, very successful businessman. He's one of the first Africans in general, because he wasn't America, but he was one of the first Africans on the board of the World Trade Center in the United States. Very, very well established. And long story short, the Nigerian government was very corrupt back then, and to this day is still a very corrupt government. Mm-hmm. And in 1987, they stripped my father of one of his most valuable assets, which was worth millions of dollars, and now to this day is worth billions of dollars.
Wow.
And that asset is called Banana Island. It was called the Lagoon Development Project, but it's now called Banana Island. Mm-hmm. And my father had poured all of his money, all of his assets, everything into it, because it was going to prove to be fruitful, which it is to this day. Mm-hmm. Well, right when the Nigerian government stripped him of the Lagoon Development Project, he died. He died fighting them.
Yeah.
And I talk more, I go into more detail about his death in my book. So when he died, our family, my mom, my brother, and I, we went from rich, you know, having everything, living a life, traveling the world, having nannies, cars, drivers, I mean, just living a life of luxury, to being poor, like literally having nothing. My mom didn't work because she didn't have to work. So my mom was American. She had met my father in New York City, and then she moved to Nigeria after they got married. So she decided, there's no way I'm going to raise my kids here in Nigeria. I'm going to bring them back to the States. So I grew up in the Bronx, on the west side of the Bronx. And by the time I was 19, not having a father, I had gotten involved in a lot of bad stuff, you know, looking for father figures in the wrong places, and you know, got involved in selling drugs. Well, started out stealing from my mom's, that progressed to stealing from jobs, that progressed to selling drugs, that progressed to running scams. And by the time I was 19, I literally had an illegal enterprise, and I was using the money to fund a record company that I was starting. I go into more detail in my book, but I don't want to give it all away.
Yeah, no,
but,
no, I get that, brother. I mean, did you ever get arrested or anything like that with law enforcement?
Yeah, okay. I was arrested once. I talk about the details of that in my book as well. And what kind of got me out of the streets was I got involved in a deal with a drug dealer that went really, really bad. And it was a wake up call for me because threatened my life. And after I made him his money back, I said, you know, and I can't do this anymore. And 6 months later, in June of 2002, I heard this voice tell me, you need to get out of here. You need to join the military. So, you know, there's more to the story, but I got out of my bed and I ended up in the Navy recruiter's office, and she ran my background, found out I had two warrants out for my arrest. I had a warrant in New Jersey and a warrant in New York. I got ready to get up and leave the office because I was just like, well, yeah, there's no way I'm going to be able to join the military. I might be going to jail. And she saw something in me I didn't see myself, and she stopped me at the door and said, come back next week in a suit. And I told her I didn't have a suit, so she said, just come back in a collared shirt, a tie, and some slacks. And I came back the next week, and she took me to both judges, the judge in New York, the judge in New Jersey, advocated on my behalf. Both judges, because this was after 9/11, decided that they would expunge my record, clear the charges, since I was joining the military and this woman was advocating on my behalf. And then she went and fudged my paperwork in the military so that I could join the military. Because even with an expunged record or a sealed record, you're still not allowed to join. But she, you know, she went against the grain and snuck me into the military.
That is such an amazing story, man. And clearly, yeah, that was a sign. And I want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
A sign from a higher power.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I really do believe that. And I know you do, too. But that was your chance, man. And I mean, and a lot of people, I mean, how could you not take that chance?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now you spent time.
Absolutely, I truly believe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, buddy. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I truly believe that it was God, man, because, like, you know, I'll go more in detail in my book, but, you know, I was laying in my bed that morning, and I heard this voice speaking to me, and I wasn't dreaming. I was wide awake. There was no one in my room, and I heard this voice. And joining the military was the last thing anybody would think that I would do. It was the last thing on my mind. So for me to hear this voice tell me to join the military that morning, and for me to walk into the recruiter's office, into the arms of that one recruiter that decided that she would take a chance on me, like, the odds of that happening is astronomical. And any other recruiter would have probably said, absolutely not, get out of here, you have a record, you know. But she did it. And I found out a few months ago that she died 4 years after did that for me. Yeah, she died in 2006. So,
yeah.
So there's more to the story there.
Now, what drew you to the SEALs? I mean, for those people that don't know out there, man, that's like the elite of the elite. What did you join the Navy saying, hey, I want to be a SEAL, or did you just kind of drop into it, or what?
Yeah. You know, it was a combination of things. The first thing was, you know, back up a little bit in 96, I saw a movie by the name of The Rock. I'm sorry, by Bad Boys.
It was a great, great movie.
Yeah. Bad Boys. Yeah. Bad Boys really kind of show me that, you know, as a young African-American male, that there's other things out there than playing sports or selling drugs or rapping. And then a year later, the same director, Michael Bay, did The Rock. And that was my first exposure to Navy SEALs, when I watched that movie, The Rock. And when I saw that movie, I was just like, wow, if I ever turn my life around, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go be a Navy SEAL. It was like saying I'm going to be an astronaut, but it was like embedded deep down inside of me. Yeah. So when I eventually ended up going to the Navy, our first day of boot camp, there was a presentation as Navy SEAL came in and did a presentation about what SEALs do. And, you know, that coupled with that film that I had watched years earlier, that dream reemerged. And that's when I was like, you know what, I want to be part of the best. I want to be a SEAL.
Now, what were some of the biggest challenges? We both have a mutual friend, Eli Crane. He was on the show about a week ago. I know you were in the same platoon together.
Yeah.
What were some of the biggest challenges? Because I asked him some of the same things. What were some of the biggest challenges, biggest takeaways that you had from the teams? I'm sure there's many of them, but if you could kind of summarize it.
From the teams or from BUDS or from SEAL training?
Well, just the whole experience of being a SEAL.
Wow, man. The biggest challenges? Man, I honestly, I didn't have a wife at the throughout most of my career in the teams. Me and my wife met towards the last, last 4 years of my career. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my kids came the last 2 years of my career. So, man, I didn't have a lot of challenges. It was a dream for me. I mean, every day.
Physically, you were, because I know that's a big part of it. Physical challenges. Yeah. I know, I'm speaking to the choir, Remy. You know that a lot of people that go through the training don't ever make it. A very small percentage do. So physically, you were like, screw it, I'm going to do it.
Now, and that's why I asked you which one you're talking about. You're talking about SEAL training. Yeah, there was a whole lot of challenges. If you're talking about the SEAL teams, I don't feel like there was a challenge, but SEAL training, I couldn't swim. I mean, I had just learned how to swim, I had like a few months before I went to SEAL training.
So I showed up to
SEAL training. That was a massive challenge. I mean, the swim times in Bonds were 85 minutes. And I was swimming 2 hours. I was swimming 120 minutes.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, the Pacific Ocean gets very, very cold. And we have wetsuits. Wetsuits are just good enough to get you through the swim.
Yeah.
And being an African American, I had little to no body fat.
Yeah.
So I would either hype out, catch hypothermia at the end of every swim, or I would be close to hypothermia at the end of every swim because I was in the water way too long. So the cold was just horrible for me. Yeah. The swimming was horrible for me. Everything else I could take. I could take being called names by the instructors.
Yeah.
I could take, I grew up in the Bronx. I could take the beat down sessions. I grew up in the Bronx getting jumped and beat up and all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I could take the physical abuse and the verbal abuse, and I could do the runs and all that other stuff. But when it came to that water, that was my kryptonite.
And so when you were in the actual teams, I mean, a lot of it is leadership development and just that no quit attitude, among many other things, right?
Yeah. And a lot of that stuff is embedded in you in SEAL training. I mean, by the time my class started with 270 and only 29 of us graduated at 270. By the time, those 29 guys get through SEAL training, all the principles that are required of a SEAL have been beat into each individual SEAL, from leadership to communication to teamwork. Every SEAL unit starts with that phrase team, SEAL team, SEAL team. Those principles are beat into us in SEAL training, and every day as a SEAL, you're called to apply those principles. And that's why I truly believe that every SEAL, almost every SEAL that gets out, they're successful, because principles that are normal to us are not as normal to a lot of people in the business or entrepreneur sector. Mm-hmm. And we're able to apply those principles flawlessly. And that's what helps us, achieve success.
Exactly. Now, why did you leave the military? Was this your time, or why did you ETS? Why?
I left in 2016 and I didn't retire. I got out because a few things. One, really, the main reason why I got out was my father died when I was five. So me and my brother, we were raised by a single mom. I had two boys, and not that I was fearful of death. I knew that was always around the corner, but I just wanted to be around as much as I could. Being a SEAL, you're gone a lot. I mean. Your workup cycle is very long. We call it a workup cycle, but your training cycle, which is your preparation to deploy, is long, and you're gone for the majority of that, traveling all over the country training, and then you go deploy. And you're gone for 6 or 7 months, sometimes 8 months, depending on where you're going and what you're doing. And so I just wanted to be home with my kids. I wanted to live a normal life. So that was the main reason why I got out.
Yeah, and that's such an important thing to do for the kids. Yeah. Now, I know you struggled a little bit when you got out of the military, Remy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, when I got out, it was just trying to find my way, find my niche. When you have the job that a SEAL has, it's hard. I mean, at least for me, speaking personally, it was hard for me to find something that lived up to that standard, that was as challenging, that was as fulfilling, and it wasn't boring. I mean, I was getting paid to jump out of planes, scuba dive, shoot guns, chase bad guys.
Blow up shit.
You know what I mean? And so, like, what other job out there can fulfill the same, can give you the same satisfaction? Yeah. And there's not many. So, I struggled. And then, there's a lot of people that made promises to me. before I got out, you know, when I got out and those promises were broken.
Yeah.
There were a lot of disappointments, and it was good that things happened the way they happened, because it taught me that I in the teens, you learn how you're taught to rely on the guy to your right and to your left. Mm-hmm. And that guy to your right and your left is taught to rely on you. That's why, again, it's the teams, you know. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, individuals fail, teams survive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so when I got out, I figured that everybody in the civilian sector, because you got to remember, I was in the military for 13 years, so the majority mm-hmm. of my adult life.
Yeah.
And so I thought everybody in the civilian sector had that same team mentality. Mm-hmm. And I quickly learned that, you know, it's about the work that you do alone. No one's going to give you a handout. No one's going to be there to help you out. Somebody may come along, but you can't depend on that. You got to depend on yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the greatest lessons that I learned. And yes, it was hard, but, you know, I got through it. You know, me and my wife is a doctor. And so, you know, she was in residency, not making money around that time. And then she finally got a job. And even when she got a job, she was working in community medicine.
Yeah.
So she wasn't making as much money as she is now, working part time at a regular hospital chain. So yeah, we struggled, but we figured it out. We worked through. I took jobs here and there. I started out speaking, and then, you know, people would ask me, hey, can you train me here or train me there? And then, you know, I worked with Eli for a little bit. We partnered in company for a short period of time. And before you knew it, you know, everything was pretty stable. And then, you know, the film industry started knocking, and I walked through that door.
Yeah, and it was cool because you're in the – some people don't know this. I don't know who doesn't know it, but you were in the Transformers last night. That's the last movie, the Transformers franchise, right?
Yeah, that was the last one. It came out in June of 2017. It was the last one. The new one, Bumblebee, comes out in December, but yeah.
Now, how was that experience working in the big screen?
It was fun. It was definitely fun. It was, you know, it was a lot like being in the military, because, you know, when a director tells you do something, you just do it. So it was easy for me to adapt, because of my whole career, I was told what to do for the most part, and I just did what I was told to do. So it was fun from that perspective. And then, you know, just being able to hang out with great actors, and like I got to, you know, hang out with Josh and Mark Wahlberg was super cool, and a bunch of the other actors, and so it was definitely a fantastic experience, and it opened up a lot more doors for me. Yeah. You know, I was able to get into commercial work after that, and signed an endorsement deal with Jockey, and working on the film I'm working on now, and then my book, which is all part of everything that happened because of that film. You know, was birthed out of that as well. So yeah.
Now, I want you to talk a little bit, Remy, about your work with I Am Second, because I think it truly is amazing. I know you're a man of God.
Yeah.
And I know it's such a big part of your life, and I think it is so important. You know, it's such an important part of your life. Can you talk about your work?
Yeah, yeah. I Am Second is a media ministry. If you go on the website, they just share raw tech. They don't preach at anybody. That's what I've always loved about I Am Second. Mm-hmm. It's not a preaching ministry. It's not a ministry that's saying, you need to do this or you're going to go to hell or you need to do that. But it's none of that. It's just it's just sharing your story. It's sharing, you know, what God did in your life, what God has brought you through. And there's some miraculous stories on there. I want to encourage everybody to go on in and check out a few. And there's a lot of familiar faces on there. A lot of celebrities go on there and they share their story of redemption and struggle and pain, you know? And so, mm-hmm. So I linked up with them, and then, you know, it was through I Am Second that I kind of started, that my ministry, my speaking ministry as it relates to preaching and teaching, began to blossom, more so than before I Am Second. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that has become a passion for me to just go wherever I'm called to share, you know, share the gospel, share my faith, share what God has brought me through, and just share with love, you know.
Now, you talk about so much important things. I mean, how can people out there listening become, I know you talk a lot about leadership, Remy. How can people become, I mean, there's probably a lot to the next question I'm going to ask you, but better leaders. How can men and women out there listening become better leaders? Because leaders, I think leadership is kind of, it's not out there like it used to be.
No, not at all. Yeah, that's. I mean, I could spend 2 hours talking about that. The first thing I would say, and this is what I do, and this is what I've always done. I've watched good leaders. I think, you know, what's great about the military is you have this structure from E1 all the way up to O10. And over the course of my career, I've seen great leaders and I've seen horrible leaders. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being intentional when watching both. You know, I remember being intentional even to this day. You know, I like to learn from bad leaders mm-hmm. because I want to learn what not to do.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I think that that's probably, you know, one of the greatest ways to learn how to be a better leader is to really watch and observe leadership, whether good leadership and bad leadership. And I'm going to tell you something that happened to me in my course. I remember at one point in my military career, I had a leader that was horrible. I mean, this person only cared about that person and no one else. And that stained me for a long period of time. And it not only did it hurt me, but it hurt the other people that this person was leading. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where the subordinates, myself included, did we do our job? Yeah, we did our job. But we didn't want to go the extra mile because we knew that that leader didn't care about us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me personally, I take lessons like that and they stick with me because us as human beings, for the most part, we learn through pain, setbacks, failure, and rejection. It's those lessons that stick with us. And mm-hmm. there was a lot of pain felt through that leadership. So anyway, that's one example is watching, observing. And then, you know, I kind of touched on it slightly, but I'll kind of reiterate it in a different form. But you learn how to be a good leader by caring about people. Mm-hmm. That's something that I always preach and teach.
Yeah, I agree with
that.
The
more you can care about those you're leading and take a genuine interest in them and not look at them as a stepping stone or someone to make you rich or someone to get you to the next rank or whatever, but if you can look at them as people with souls and people who need to be cared for and handled respectfully, that's you'll learn how to be a good leader.
Yeah.
You really will if you could do that, you know, so.
Great advice, man. I mean, yeah. And I know we talked about it earlier, buddy. I mean, we talked about some of the struggles that you had as a young guy, you know, growing up. What do you think some of the biggest challenges out there are for youth in America?
Wow, there's so many. I mean, no direct. A lot of youth just don't have any direction.
Yeah, I was going to say direction, yeah.
And then with that. No, let me rephrase that. A lot of youth do have direction. They just have bad direction. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll just, you know, be upfront, you know, with a lot of the things that I saw as a kid through film, through music, you know, that's where I got my direction from.
Sure.
Through TV, that's where I got my direction from. You know, I'd learned how to be a man, quote unquote, through media. Mm-hmm. You know, and so and that direction wasn't good direction. So I think that's one of the challenges that a lot of young people have, especially with social media, because with social media, every single person has the ability to put out content. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these young kids, they're looking at this content, and not only are they looking at this content, they're creating the content and they're mimicking it. Mm-hmm. So now you have a lot of young people who are learning how to be young people and grow through other young people.
Yeah.
You know, and so I would say, you know, the biggest challenge is misdirection. How to delineate between what's good direction, what's solid, what's going to keep you on the right track, keep you focused, and help you be truly successful, and then bad direction.
Yeah.
And then another challenge I think a lot of kids have nowadays is just this propensity to get everything so fast. And I think, again, that's another agent of social media. With social media, we get everything fast. You know, we get our news fast. We find out what's going on with our friends fast. You know, everything comes fast. And because of that, a lot of kids don't understand the importance of hard work. And they don't understand that it's going to take years.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes years to get to that end result.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of young people. Yeah, a lot of these.
Entitlement.
Yeah, it's that entitlement. It's that, you know what? I saw it on social media or somebody else did it. So, you know what? Maybe I'll just do it in a few days and my life will be where that person's life is when they don't even see all the hard work that that person had to do to get to where they are. And so I think that's also another challenge that these young people have is being able to just really delineate and understand that, you know what? Things are not going to, this is not a microwave type life.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot, you know, I mean, you know this, Remy. I mean, it's so many, it's who you associate with too, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you are, I mean, you're the average of the five people you associate with. So yeah. If you're associating with the bad elements, then you're probably going to come in. You were in that environment at one time in your life.
Yeah.
And thank God that you had, you know, a calling that pulled you away from it. But I really do believe that, you know, you are who you associate with.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. I agree 100%. And you know what? Like, I have a friend. Like, I got a buddy of mine right now doing 10 years in prison.
Yeah.
Me and we sold drugs together, and we did a lot of other bad things together. And fortunately, I was able to get into the military and get away, but he didn't leave.
Yeah.
And he kept hanging around that same type of group of people, and now he's doing 10 years in prison, you know? So, no, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, if people are out there struggling and hitting, you know, if they're at the bottom, what advice would you give people out there? Because I'm sure that there's people out there going to listen to this and say, you know, I'm at that point where I'm just at rock bottom. What do I do? I mean, what kind of advice would you give those people, Remy?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is pray.
Yeah.
Pray. You know, I have a great background. Yeah, I was a Navy SEAL. Yeah, you know, I'm an actor in Hollywood. Yeah, I advise on big movies.
But you're very humble. You're a very humble man.
Yeah, and I say all that to say, it's prayer for me, man. It's my faith in God. It's my relationship with God, man. Every single day, I start my day with devotional, you know, prayer, and I read the Bible. You know, even if it's just a few scriptures, you know, I just read because I need a connection to something that is not in this world, something that is greater than me. And so, you know, for anybody struggling out there, and even when I'm preaching and teaching, I tell people, I don't preach to people, you need to come turn to God. I tell them, just try coming to Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, just see what happens if you pray and call out. And so that's for me. You know, every single day, I can't rely on my worldly accomplishments, because I honestly know that my life isn't what it is because of everything Remy did.
Yeah.
My life is what it is because God, he's ordained my steps and he's opened up doors for me. And yes, I had to do my part by, you know, doing the work, but he opened up those doors for me and helped me to prepare for when the opportunity did come. So that would be my first piece of advice. The second piece of advice I would say is, you know, don't feel sorry for yourself, man. You know, don't feel sorry for yourself. There's always somebody in life who's in a worse position than you are.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's always somebody in life. And you know what? And that person is more joyful probably than you.
Yeah.
You know, I just got off of a call earlier, two hours ago with this lady who I've been friends with for a long period of time. And she's in a shelter. You know, she just told me, she's like, I've been in the shelter for a month. She hasn't had a job for years. Her family has pretty much disowned her. No one's helping her. She's in a shelter.
Yeah.
And she has no one. She has kids. Her kids don't want to have anything to do with her. And they don't even want to help her, which to me boggles my mind, because if my mom was in any type of bond, she would be in my house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, you know, she's in a bad position. She's in a worse position than a lot of other people. And she started off the call, you know, joyous. She was a bit joyous, which I didn't even know that she was in that predicament until she finally broke down and told me what was going on. But there's always somebody in life that's in a worse situation than you are.
Yeah.
So pick yourself up, charge forward. There's always a way. You know, when you read my book, and that's what the way I tried to write my book, I tried to write it in a way where you will see how all these instances in my life where there was absolutely no way, where I was at the bottom, essentially. I was at the bottom. But I had to pick my head up, stop feeling sorry for myself, and charge out of the bottom,
mm-hmm.
step by step. And it wasn't easy, but, you know, I am when I where I am now.
Well, and you got to, man, and you're so right, Remy. I mean, you we have to wake up every morning and be grateful, right?
Yeah,
because you
absolutely.
Be grateful, even just waking up, breathing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it starts with the simple stuff that we tend to take for granted, right?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
if you change your mindset, you change your life, right?
Absolutely. Mindset is everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Mindset is everything.
Well, Remy, you're the man, dude. I mean, I know you're busy. I know you're, for all the listening out there, Remy's going to be in Denver this weekend, I think the 18th.
Yeah.
You're going to be
yep.
at First Bank Center, I believe, in Broomfield.
Yep.
I'm going to try to get over there and meet your brother in person. Thank you so much for
Thank
taking
you.
The time, man, to come on and tell a little bit about your story. I want to have you back on if you would be willing to come back on when your book comes out in 2019 in January.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if people want to find you, brother, how can they find you?
I'm on all the social media platforms. I'm on LinkedIn, Remy Adeleke, Twitter, Remy Adeleke, Facebook, Instagram, all Remy Adeleke. And then if you go on transformstory.com, again, that's transformstory.com. That's where all my book information is. You can pre-order a copy, so go ahead and pre-order a copy right now. And yeah, that's how people can find me.
All right, Remy, thank you so much, brother, for coming on the show. I hope you're safe. Wish you much success in the future, brother. I hope I see you this weekend.
Yes, sir. Look forward to seeing you.
All right. Take
Thank
care,
you.
Brother. Bye-bye.
I know. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.